Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader. Welcome to the House of the Hounds. We're the Lorehounds, your guides to the Dance of the Dragons. I'm John.
And I'm David. And this is our coverage of Season 1, Episodes 5 and 6, titled We Light the Way and The Princess and the Queen of the HBO Max original series House of the Dragon.
Today, we'll be giving our hot takes before diving into a deeper discussion of the episodes. Then we'll answer some ravens from listeners.
Please do send us feedback because we'd love to hear your thoughts and reactions. You can send those emails, those ravens, to HOTD at thelorehounds.com or head over to the contact page of our website. And there's a contact form, or you can use the voicemail app and you can drop in a voicemail and we'll put that right into the podcast, just like Abby did today.
You can support the community on Supercast or Patreon, join the conversation on our Discord server, or take a listen to our affiliate podcasts. You can get links for everything in the link tree in the show notes.
Right. The show notes have got lots of stuff. You got a new fancy link tree going on in there to make things easier. We've got so many affiliates now and so many show guys, all kinds of stuff that we actually had to get one of those link tree things to.
Yeah. I was looking at our show notes and I said, this is unreadable. I need to fix this. And so I made us a link tree.
Yes, thank you for doing that. And thank you for making a show guide, too. I was using it the other night when I was watching episode 6, I think it was, and there was one of the dragons, Craxes, and I was like, wait, dragon was that? And wait, who's supposed to be the writer? And the show guide on the phone works really nicely.
Yeah.
It auto-formats the Notion system, auto-formats it, whether you're on your laptop or mobile phone, and it was just really convenient. And then of course you've gone to town with Rings of Power and you've fired up a whole other one.
Oh yeah. The one guide to rule them all is really starting to shape up.
That is very cool. And those are subscriber exclusive benefits. So if you're interested in getting access to those, sorry for the soft shoe here of the salesmanship, but it's a lot of work and we would love you to have access to it. $3 a month and you get access to it. It's crazy. Or we have a season pass. John, do you want to mention the season pass?
The season pass is a new thing we're doing. We said, hey, some people hate monthly subscriptions, but they want the premium benefits like the show guides, like the ad-free podcast, like the early access. So they have the option to pay us $10, get unlimited full access to everything House of the Dragon that we do for seasons 1 and 2 forever. There is no recurring charge. It is a one-time fee, and they get this little badge of honor that they are a season pass holder. And they get all that content. I saw somebody signed up today. So
yeah,
somebody, it's appealing to somebody.
Yeah, yeah. Figured, a while back I was talking to some of our Patreon subscribers who had unsubscribed, and lots of people have stuff going on in their lives. And one person I talked to, they're just like, I just cleaned house on Patreon because I had like 20 accounts, 20 subscriptions. Yep, I wasn't using half of them. I was just like, I don't care, blanket, it's nothing against you guys. And I was like, yeah, I totally get that. And there's other people whose, finances are fluctuating, or there's just all kinds of reasons. And we, at the same time, we know that people are interested in supporting the community and supporting us and putting on a quality podcast takes a lot of resources. And so they want to offer that support. And so I was like, oh, how do we do that in a way, you know, that solves that? And we're like, oh, okay, big shows like this. I don't know where we're going to talk about other shows we're going to do this year because it's the first one we've done. But we just
think
offer
Rings of Power for sure.
For sure.
Yeah. We'll talk about other stuff, but
exactly. But it's just, it's easy. It's just a flat rate and you get the ad free access and any other, the bonus stuff. So,
yeah. All right. So salesmanship aside,
please,
we are going to talk about content now.
Yes.
You know, Bo Burnham, the content song. Cause look, I made you some content. Daddy made you your favorite open wide. All right. So that's us today.
We've been on the content machine too ever since you since both of us are back and our affiliates are firing on all cylinders.
There's, I know. I
there were like I, four podcasts released today or something, three or four.
Something like that. So I've been doing this podcast schedule.
Yes.
On the Discord server. So if you want to see everything coming out for a week, you can now see it in one place. And boy, does it get busy quickly, especially right now.
Quickly.
All right, content. Hot D. What's your hot D take on hot D this round?
If episode 4 was the source of all of the friction and drama and hurt feelings and indiscretions, this pair of episodes was the stupid people doing stupid shit episodes.
Yeah.
Right. And you end up with more consequences and the thing is just spiraling out of control. What did the Succession dad say? You know, I love you, but you just aren't serious people.
Yep. I love you, but you're not serious people. Very true.
And so when you get stuff like, I don't even remember his name off the top of my head right now. I should get the show guide open. The lover to Lenore.
Oh yeah. That's Joffrey.
Yes. And he goes and he whispers in Kristen Cole's ear and you're just like, dude, this is a Knight's Guard, like Knight of the Knight's Guard. What are you doing?
Kingsguard, yep.
What are you doing? It's telling these secrets like, okay, yeah, you're clever enough and you've sussed out the relationship. Good on you. Watch it a little bit more. Understand the nature of it a little bit more. So it's just, and don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining because this is the drama that we come for, right? This is the stuff. But I just shake my head and I'm just like, oh my gosh, just silly people doing silly stuff. And it's been interesting coming off of Shogun, where we were comparing Shogun to House of the Dragon, and now we're doing House of the Dragon back to Shogun. Just the ostentatiousness and the lavishness and the obtuseness of people with they're just splashing their feelings out and they're just big and loud and doing all this crazy stuff. Whereas in Shogun, people were tight and controlled and subtle and, you know, thoughtful. And they were thinking, even if they weren't as smart as Torunaga, you know, they were still trying to think two or three moves down the road.
Right.
And it's and this world, whereas as violent as that era of Japan was, this is also just a brutally violent society.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the fact that a Kingsguard can just straight up murder somebody and face no consequences for it, you know, it's bonkers. It's absolutely bonkers.
I think it's a really interesting choice to have, and we're going to talk full spoilers here. I think it's a really interesting choice to have, you know, Kristen almost take his life at the end of the episode and get stopped by Allison.
That was so great, right? Like, it was like, oh, Shogun!
Yeah. But the most important thing here is that they don't ever show the direct aftermath of that. We immediately jump 10 years from there.
Right.
You never see, now I have to go back to my thing. Okay, Sir Harold Westerling, the head of the Kingsguard, you never see him have a moment of like, son, you did a bad thing. We're putting you on, you know, administrative paid leave for now. whatever it is, you know, we never see any consequences. And I'm sure there was some level of it. But I guess when the queen says, no, he's under my protection, then that's that.
Right. And we don't even see the change of going from being Rhaenyra's sworn protector to Alicent's sworn protector, right? How did that change happen?
Right.
But I also really liked that. And they just moved us along. They were like, okay, here's the new state of play. And so we're actually focused in on what's important and just bypassing all the non-important stuff. So now we get to this next inflection point, which is 10 years on.
Yep. Yep. I do like the time jump. It disoriented me the first time I watched it, but watching it now, mm-hmm. I really like the way that they cut this.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got all of the character motivations we needed out of the prequel era, I guess.
Agreed.
And now we've moved on to the consequences.
Right.
We've done the F around. We're finding out. And
it's taken 10 years.
Here we are. Yep. And I really like, and I want to talk more about this while we, when we get to the Lionel Strong Viserys conversation, but mm-hmm. this idea of was he tested? The idea of has Viserys been tested
as mm-hmm. king? Oh, okay, right.
Mm-hmm. And what will his legacy be?
Right, right.
And you have this king who never, ever lights the match, but is piling up this powder keg.
Mm-hmm.
Because he'll never address something head on. He's always like, think of the consequences of addressing that. It's like, yeah, one day there are going to be consequences, and you can't stop that, so you could either put an end to it now, or you can deal with them.
Right.
Yeah.
And this goes into the quality of his leadership. And in some ways, he's strategically minded, and he can see through certain things. And in other ways, he's very congenital, and he wants people to get along, and he wants to have this big mm-hmm. family, and look at these boys playing and whacking each other with wooden swords. Isn't that great?
Yeah. Lionel Strong, that's the hope.
And then all the while he's deluding himself and he's blinding himself to what the realities are that are facing him.
I mean, he absolutely knows.
Right,
he just doesn't want to publicly acknowledge it because, like he said, think of the consequences.
And when he is directed to see and to open his eyes, so when Rhaenyra says, well, what are you going to do? What does she say? What's the line? Something about, like, what are you going to do with the viper in your den or something like that? When her and Viserys are talking.
About Otto.
Yeah, about Otto. And he's like, you're going to marry. And then she's like, okay, what are you going to do about your hand?
Mm-hmm.
And then when he confronts Otto, he has all the evidence. He understands the implications. He can see the manipulations. He can see the gaslighting
right.
without any like scales falling from my eyes. No, he knows in an instant. He's like, oh yeah, that's a play. And you've been playing me all along. Mm-hmm. So it is a willful blindness, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, let's get into the main episodes. I've broken it down by it's almost a scene by scene. I'm going to be honest with you; it's pretty detailed, but but it's not quite scene by scene. I did you know consolidate a little bit. So
sure.
First off, let's just pour one out for Rhea Royce, as Damon would call her, the bronze bitch. That's what he likes to call her.
I forgot about this.
Damon, stop calling her that. Also, stop murdering her.
Stop murdering people. I had forgotten about this, and I had forgotten how sad I was. As she's writing up, I was like, oh, who's this? I don't remember who this is. Oh, wow, she looks badass. I love her armor. She's clearly a great horseman and... You know, oh, cool. And then when he shows up again, I was like, oh yeah, now I remember. And it's such a great scene. It's such a great character. The actor is does such a great job. And then I'm like, oh, but I wanted more of her. I wanted to know more of this character. It was really frustrating in a good way. In a good way.
Now I wonder, you know, as we go into the Dance of the Dragons, I wonder how this will affect the allegiances of the Vale.
Right.
You know?
Right. So this is one of those things where they may not be so excited by backing the green, but...
Backing the black. Oh, yeah, yeah. I see what you're saying.
Backing the green,
They would rather back the black, but you know, you can't support Daemon.
Exactly. The hurt is so deep there that that they don't really have much of a choice. So they may be unwilling allies to the Green.
Right.
But we don't know, right? The books know, but we don't know as show viewers.
Right. So Otto tries to convince Allison it's necessary to supplant Rhaenyra, and then we get an introduction to Lara Strong, who tells Allison about the Moon Tea and begins to work his way into her trust.
This, man, it's not like Otto's telling any porcupines, right? It's true. Allison's legacy is in jeopardy the moment Rhaenyra steps the throne. So it's not wrong, but it's all just wrapped up in the slime of this whole manipulation that you're just like, damn, what do you do? And later Rhaenyra has a great solution for it. But you know, right now Otto's not wrong, but damn it. I hate to admit that he's right.
Well, the problem is he's right because he makes himself right. Because if you didn't have schemers like this, it might be true that you could sort of just massage Rhaenyra into the throne.
Mm-hmm.
But also, he caused a little bit of the problem with Laenor. I don't think Rhaenyra has to marry Laenor unless Otto opens his mouth to Viserys about seeing Daemon in her.
Right, right, right. And he was so gleeful at that opportunity to bounce Rhaenyra.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to find, you know, to get into that final position of being the household of the regent, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I just think Otto is one of the people sowing discord about this.
Yeah, for sure. And he's ready to swoop in later, so.
Right. It's like that meme where you're shooting at the couch and you're like, who would do this? Shooting at the person. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I know the one where you stick the bike spoke in your own bike spoke.
I'm talking about the guy shooting someone on the couch, and then he goes, who would do this?
Seen that one.
That's Otto.
Okay. Yeah, right. Isn't that, there's another one. Yeah. No, well, yeah, that's the same with putting the stick in your bike spoke.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then you blame the stick.
Yep.
It's like, no, you idiot. You're the one who did it.
So Viserys and his entourage.
Well, we didn't really talk about Larys really quick.
Oh, right? That's true. Let's talk about Larys.
Creepy, creepy old Larys, who again is fronting like, oh, you know, I'm just this guy because I can't be a guy with the guys. So I'm sweet and observant, but damn, he's creepy as hell.
Have you seen the deleted scene between Pycelle and Tywin in Game of Thrones?
No.
It's amazing. I got to find it for you. Okay. I saw it on TikTok one day. And in it, you know, Pycelle is trying to get back on the small council after Tyrion booted him off when he was Hand. And Tywin's like, why would I do that? And he's doing the like, please, Master Tywin, can I please end up? And he's like, can you drop the act? And he goes, I know you're discerning, Tywin. And he's just like all of a sudden really articulate and not stuttering at all. And he's like, why do you do that? He's like, because if you start to seem like a threat, they'll treat you like a threat.
Right.
You know, and I do think that that's the same thing as Larys. I was going somewhere with it, I promise.
I got it. Larys, it makes sense.
Yeah, Larys is the same way. He's like, I'm just this poor, you know, disabled second son, right? The second sons are a big theme of this whole series and what the second sons will do to claim power. The Valyrians as a house, Daemon as a person, and Aemon even we see with the whole dragon thing, but then we see Larys is another second son,
and he is very cunning and patient, and he really uses the second son status very well until he's able to make his move. And so that just marks him really dangerous. And it's nice in the sense that we don't have Varys anymore. Right, with Little Bert. We're like, we need that spy.
I serve the realm.
Right. But we want that spy, cloak and dagger, right? You know, you've got your dashing man at arms, you know,
who'll
swoop in. But having the person in the shadows is always a great compliment to this kind of story setup. And so he really fits that super well. And then there's his little, what is it, a bee? His little bee symbol that comes up later.
Yeah.
So it's good stuff.
I also want to say, what's scary about him is that he's as smart as Varys, but as morally depraved as Littlefinger. Right?
Morally depraved.
I'd say so. I think Littlefinger has sort of an end goal. Like, I don't even know what the end goal is for Larys. I couldn't tell you. Like, he wanted to inherit Harrenhal, but what else? Like, what does he want beyond that?
Open a podiatry practice? I don't know.
Oh my God. A massage parlor.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. A nail salon. I don't know. He's a puzzling character. I hope to see more from him, because as disturbing as the foot scene is in the later episodes, I do love him as a character. I think he's a cool addition to the cast.
And Matthew Needham plays him really well. He's got that sort of furrowed brow, like kind of pained look, and just his hair, the way that they've costumed him and done his makeup for his hair. It's kind of greasy, and it's a perfect look all around.
Yep, the hunched over kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah,
love it. Viserys then takes his entourage to Driftmark. And Viserys proposes a marriage between Rhaenyra and Laenor, which Corlys accepts only after Viserys agrees to give their children the Valyrian name. However, the monarch will bear the Targaryen name.
So this was all great stuff, but I'm going to lead off with like a little nitpick. And it's just a little one. But if you put the king and his heir on a ship, you're putting the realm in mortal danger, because seafaring accidents happen all the time. Piracy, krakens, you know, stealth dragons. I don't know. You name it. Like, you have both people, you know, that are supposed to protect the realm afterwards in one position. It's like putting the president and the vice president both on the same
airplane. Yeah.
You know,
well, in defense of this decision, they're literally going across the lake. They're going across Blackwater Bay. Driftmark, King's Landing.
Oh, it's not
Landing.
That far. Oh, well, maybe I should check the geography before I
Driftmark,
pop off
King's Landing,
my mouth.
And Dragonstone are all within this same little bay.
Okay.
So they're really close.
Well, that just showed my ignorance of how well I know the geography.
But that's why Stannis was able to attack King's Landing via Blackwater Bay, because he was a Dragonstone.
Got it. Well, yeah, I know Dragonstone was very close. I just didn't realize that Driftmark was so close. I figured it was a little bit further away. Varys gets pretty sick, which is a great little character beat for him as well, that he's, you know, very prone to motion sickness, which would make riding a dragon also very difficult, I would imagine.
Well, meanwhile, this guy rode the biggest dragon of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think the second biggest. I think Vhagar is bigger than Balerion.
But he just rode him once, right?
No, just towards the end of his life. But I do think he rode him pretty regularly.
Okay.
At first. He was the last rider of him, though.
And it's interesting that they go to Corlys instead of calling Corlys to him.
Well, right? Because...
Yeah, exactly.
He's in low standing right now.
Exactly.
He's going asking for a favor.
Hat in hand, as they say, and it would be, it's very telling in terms of the power dynamics that the king has to go to, you know, his cousin. I guess a cousin's a cousin. Doesn't matter whether they're married or not, right? They're just cousins. So, you know, to go to his cousin. So that's the importance. It also, I think, signifies the importance of the proposal that. Yeah. You know, we're out of options here, and you and I are both in this position where the realm is watching, and Rhaenyra is, you know, hasn't done a great job in finding her own match. So you want this, and it strengthens your position. You can't say no. You couldn't say no not because you're because I'm your king and I'm telling you to do something, but just in terms of the power dynamics of a second son always moving up the ranks, right?
He definitely offers Corlys something that Corlys has coveted, which is rising the status of the Valyrian name. Like, maybe the king will still be a Targaryen, but all of the king's sons and daughters will be Valyrians.
We and would that, want, but yet somehow that doesn't work out in blood terms.
You know what I mean.
Yes,
you know
what
I
mean.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember, but in a later episode that we're going to talk about, not this episode, he does say, you know, it's the name that matters.
It's true. That's right.
He's very focused on, he's like, history doesn't remember blood. It remembers the names.
That is a very good point. That is a very good point.
An interesting outlook. So Rhaenyra has her own proposal, which is an open marriage with Laenor. Laenor's lover, Joffrey, is all in, but Rhaenyra's lover, Criston Cole, is not. He wants to run away to Essos. Crispin then confesses his sins to Allison.
I don't know, John. I just sometimes feel that you just want me to be your podcasting whore. Sorry, I did almost didn't
want to. You want me to be your whore? He's so mopey.
He is so mopey.
But it's interesting here that Crispin, I'm going to call him Crispin now because I've seen him act terribly this episode. He proposes going to Essos, which is exactly what Laenor gets to do later.
Right. That's a good point.
He's like, why don't we leave all this responsibility away and go to Essos? And Laenor's like, that's a great idea. We should do that.
Should do that too. I don't know what. Well, obviously, it just goes to the naivete of Criston Cole that he thinks that they could escape, and that they wouldn't be found out, and it wouldn't come up, and they wouldn't be chased in some way. You know,
this blonde haired woman with a dragon that follows her around.
Yeah, exactly. And this beefcake dude. And what are they going to do for money? I don't know. It's such a boyish, silly thing to even think. But it is the moment where Rhaenyra recognizes the gravity of her role and her position, and where she does step into it, and she's like, "Dude, I am the crown. I can't run away. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can be silly and flip and do all kinds of silly stuff." But I am the embodiment of our nation state. So so she affirmatively steps into it in that scene.
And but you also have, in an earlier episode, Daemon's the one who puts this into her head, this whole idea of, okay, marry for duty, but then you could do whatever you want.
Oh, that's a very good point.
And that's that's not the way that most people live in this world. It's just the way that Daemon lives.
Right. And it is a way that Alicent positively does not live.
Yep.
And is offended by the notion that one would live that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to get to a line later that's, in the end, honor and decency will prevail. And I just think that's such a character statement for a mission statement for Alicent.
And I love this too. And I think I mentioned this earlier on in our season one coverage, that Alicent reminds me a little bit of Sansa in that there is this idealism. Mm-hmm. There is this sense of there is a right way. The world should be this right way. And then when we see the world and we go out into the world and we get out of the bubble of the Red Keep, the world is definitely not the idealistic picture that we've painted for things.
Right.
And so Alicent's indignation at that people would do these kinds of things, it goads her, where Sansa steps into it and embraces it and goes, oh, this is the reality. Okay. Now I'm going to start to play games then. Okay. Mm-hmm. And she gets it and she starts to use the system as opposed to Alicent, who's sort of trying to ice break through the system, right? Just sort of brute force through it. But she ends up there in the same place, though, because she's as damn manipulative as any of them.
Well, is she? Because she does push back against a lot of it. And she honestly, to defend Allison, which is a hard thing to do because
they don't make it easy.
She's very naive and she makes a lot of dumb decisions. But to defend her, all she ever advocates for is bringing the truth to light.
True. That's true.
She just says, that's a good point. Look, your daughter has illegitimate children here. And I would not use that term in real life. Don't at me. Just, this is, you know, they're called bastards in this world. And they don't have a claim to succession. And that matters for our family because, Viserys, one day you're going to be gone and we're going to have to deal with the aftermath. And it's going to be really bad if the line of succession includes obvious bastards.
And this is Otto's agenda, right? That he's installed in Alicent. Mm-hmm. And again, yeah, but she has not a point, right? Agenda.
Like, there is a point to this. Like, people, somebody says this episode, people have eyes. Mm-hmm. Or the next episode. Like, people have eyes. People see what's going on here.
Yeah, yeah. And the realm wants something and expects certain forms to be followed. And mm-hmm. if you tack against those, it's going to be rough sailing.
Right, right. And also, I don't know. There is something to like the deception behind it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I get where Allison's coming from. I do think she's too much of a hall monitor, and she really just I don't care for her very much. Like, I wouldn't want to be friends with her. But she's a really interesting character because I think you can see her mission statement, and it's a clear motivation for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Her character is very clear, and that's great because it creates a lot of drama, space for a lot of drama.
Especially a lot of our bad decisions are informed by our, you know, the negative things that hurt us in childhood. Mm-hmm. And look at this, where she finds out that her best friend in the world, the only one she thought she could relate to at court, was lying to her.
Mm. And in a way that also she finds vouched particularly disgusting, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and she
yeah.
vouched for her so many times,
right? Yeah. Yeah,
not great. So this gets to breathe a little bit now, this episode, and Viserys is getting treatment with leeches and whatever else. He's very ill, and he doubts his legacy to Lionel Strong.
Yeah, so you've got this note here that you want to talk about his legacy.
Yeah, so this whole idea of how will I be remembered? Mm-hmm. Well, you continued Jaehaerys's good stuff, right? Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, more is better. More is always better. And then, but he's letting this powder keg build up, and he's losing every battle that he fights. He's just not fighting physical battles. He's mm-hmm. fighting political battles that he just cannot win.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think, has he been tested and failed? Because that's kind of how I feel.
Mm. And well, I think the question is what are his tests? And it feels like the tests aren't great battles and conquering other nations and things like that, but it is to manage the mm-hmm. realm, right? His job is to manage the steady state. And there's a constant level of dysfunction because human beings are going to be human beings, I guess, right? We're just going to be messy like that. And his job is to manage that. And he's terrible at it. I think he's got the skills,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, what is it that he shies away from, you know, knocking heads and shaking people out of their stupidity and trying to keep things. And maybe it's a constant level of work and grooming. I mean, Torin Naga worked tirelessly to do that, right? He had a framework at which to view people.
Mm-hmm.
He listened and he was patient and he was controlled. So, so interesting comparison, Torin Naga versus...
Yeah. Well, even Viserys. The Tycho, right? Even the Tycho
even the
prior
Tycho.
To Torin Naga. Let's not go too deep into Shogun, but the previous ruler had left what would become a powder keg. And Torin Naga was smart enough to see that powder keg and make sure somebody else lit the match.
Mm. And he set the charges in the right... He kind of moved the charges into the right place and then let somebody
else...
Exactly. Yeah.
Whereas so this is just like, Viserys is just like, I don't know, make sure nobody says anything mean to each other in the moment. And that way we never talk about our feelings and it's all going to come out violently one day.
Yeah, yeah. This is the He is the poster child for why you should get therapy. Why we should all have the opportunity to talk about our feelings and unpack these complexities. Because when not dealt with, they lead to big messes.
Mm-hmm. At the welcome feast of Rhaenyra and Laenor's wedding, Alicent shows up late in Hightower Green during the king's speech, nonetheless. Oof,
man.
Gerald Royce accuses Daemon of killing Rhaenyra, but Daemon rebuts him and requests his inheritance. Daemon takes a dance with Rhaenyra, and Kristen goes berserk on Joffrey, mistaking him to be a blackmailer.
So, didn't we say this, like, feasts and festivals are always these great crux, you know, crucibles and stories, and here we go, right? Everybody's out on display. This is the episode of stupid people doing stupid stuff.
Yep.
And it's just happening all over the place.
But I love the staging of all of this, right? Mm-hmm. Viserys is finally, like, going pretty smooth on his speech. It seems like it's off to a good start. Allison comes in late wearing Hightower Green. Then you have Larys, who we've just been shown knows a lot of stuff and is very clever, saying to his brother, what color is
that
the
was
beacon in Old Town when the Hightowers go to war? Green. So it's not just the color. I wrote it wrong in the recap, because really it's not just the color of House Hightower. It's the color of war for House Hightower.
Mm-hmm. Right. When the beacon is lit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is like, I am going to battle. And then later, of course, you have Hobart Hightower, her uncle, who's passed by the time of the time jump. He's going like, yeah, we're all with you and you're standing strong and you know, wearing Hightower green. And so this, she finds new allies when she feels alone.
Mm-hmm.
She's felt alone after Rhaenyra deceived her, so she's like, I'm gonna find the allies I can.
Right. And in a way that is staged so brilliantly, not only from a show production way, but also in an in-universe way. I'm gonna make an entrance and I'm gonna wear just a very simple color, and it's gonna send shockwaves.
Do you think she had a handmaid and she's like, tell me when the king starts a speech?
I'm sure. I'm sure.
Give me my cue. It's like a wedding, right? Yeah. Give me my cue.
Right. I need, 3.5 minutes to walk from the staircase into the room. Okay.
Oh my God. So this whole thing with Daemon too is absurd. The inheritance. Oh yeah. So don't fuck with me in my own house, first of all. And I'll be taking your house. Thank you very much.
It's wild. It's just absolutely wild. And it is just such a Daemon. I don't know. He's such a great character. He's such a great character. And it is just so messy.
Yep. He is messy. That's a great word to describe him. And of course, even messier when he's, I said dancing, but it's more like foreplay with Rhaenyra. Yeah. And they're like, I feel like wrong watching this. Like, this is like so dirty. He's like, he's a lame husband. And she goes, well, then why don't you cut through all these people and steal me to Dragonstone? I was like, wow, that's ballsy at your own wedding.
And that they do it in Valyrian and in their sort of secret little coded language is so great. So there they are and for everybody is around them and they're just having this intense conversation and nobody can understand them.
I mean, you also can see him like almost kissing her there too.
Yeah.
Like I think he would have kissed her had the fight not broken out.
Right. That's a good point. And that would have been interesting because Viserys was getting edgier and edgier. He's like trying to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. He's like looking what the F is happening here. And boy, he would just be, he would lose it. He would flip his wig because Corlys is right there. And oh man, it would be such a mess. It would be such a mess.
Yeah. But also you have this really interesting thing that they do by subverting our expectations which I hate using that word, but that's exactly what they're doing here. But what they're doing here is they're saying, okay, let's let all this tension build up over here on the dance floor. And then a noise happens on that part of the dance floor. We're going to break the tension with something even worse.
Yeah.
Amazing structure of the episode. This was, I think, the episode where I was like, this is like a 9 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10 show. This is A++.
And that they are, that they keep the action hidden by the group and then, by the crowd. Yep. And we're in that position of like, wait, what's going on? What's going on? Yeah. Like it's definitely a really great construction, and that they have plotted all of these things out ahead of time and then done the writing and moved the characters. So I never feel the hand of the writer in any of this stuff. This all feels like it's turning on the characters, and what they would do and their motivations.
Well, this is what happens when you have a beginning, middle, and end to the story, and you have a set number of seasons.
Right. You're clear about what your job is.
Right. That was the problem with the end of Game of Thrones. They didn't know where they were going. Mm-hmm. And then when they finally had to get there, they had to jetpack everybody around and make sloppy choices. This is very thought out. This is extremely well plotted, and I love that.
Yeah. For sure. And it shows. It definitely shows.
Poor Joffrey. Dude's just trying to kind of flirt with Kristen. Crispin.
He's gross. He was gross. He really bothered me. And so does Laris. And again, it's stupid people doing stupid stuff.
Joffrey's icky, but like not icky enough to beat to death.
No, you agreed. Not.
I think Kristen is a lot more toxic. I think Joffrey, if I'm going to defend Joffrey, which I think he deserves a defense, he doesn't have a mouth to speak with anymore. I think
gross.
I think Joffrey is just trying to protect his lover.
Yeah.
And Joffrey says, you know what?
Well, and protect
she
his
knows
own.
Your secret.
Mm-hmm.
Right. She knows your secret. You know hers now, and that will protect you. And all he was doing was saying to him, like, hey, just making sure we're level here. We see eye to eye here. And they did not see eye to eye. They saw eye to fist.
I don't disagree with the play in as much as, leveraging a secret for a secret. That makes sense. What he didn't do was size up Kristen Cole. He didn't actually learn who the man was before mm-hmm. making this and just making this really gross, thing. And if he had just cozied up and just said, oh, hey, I'm Laris's man at arms, we're buddies. And I know you're the queen's protector or the princess's protector. And so I just want to make sure we're good, and if you need me, I'm there for you and you can be there for me. Like if he'd played it straight, that might've, but he played it. He overplayed it, not realizing who he was talking to. And that ended mm-hmm. his life, right?
Yeah.
He thought he was more clever than he was.
Yep. Pour one out. Joffrey is in the deceased category in the show guide. Rhaenyra and Laenor then marry in a private ceremony.
Right, immediately after.
Yeah. And Allison stops Kristen from committing suicide.
Man, wow. What a way to end an episode. You could have ended the season on this.
I know. And a lesser show would have.
It would have, right? The fact that they're standing there, everybody's disheveled, the banquet hall, the great hall there is just all, there's blood on the floor, food and drink everywhere. The place probably stinks to high heaven. And they're just all disheveled, and it does not bode well for their coming betrothal.
Agreed.
And then to see Cole in the garden there, and I was like, "Seppuku," but no,
don't say that too loud because somebody's going to add us and be like, "That's not seppuku. All suicide is seppuku," and we're going to get a whole thing.
All right,
and I'm avoiding that.
Anyway, it was the shogun of it all.
There. I get what you're saying, but I don't think this is, I don't even think it's comparable to seppuku because it's basically just, I'm an idiot. I should kill myself.
That's true. It's a good point. It's not ritualized. It's just like, oh, mm-hmm. boo hoo. you know, for me.
Seppuku is like an honor thing, I think.
Right, exactly.
You know, I do think there's a component of that, but I think it's more shame-based than honor-based with Kristen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is definitely shame, shame-driven behavior.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, Olivia Cooke, when she walks in and she just gives him that, she doesn't even have to move her head, doesn't even have to shake her head or anything.
Should I tell you that it's not Olivia Cooke yet?
Oh, sorry.
Emily Carey.
They cast these two pretty well.
Yeah, like, they look the time much more jump, similar than the Rainiers.
It happened. Yeah, the Rainiers are very different, where Emily and Olivia look very well. But anyway, Emily Carey nails this by just sort of, and she doesn't even have to move her body all that much. Just her emoting in her face stops him cold. And it's so good. It's just such a powerful way to end the episode.
Yep. Yep. By the way, if you go to our show guide, you can click in to the characters and you'll see actor and young actor slots because we have the time shift in this.
And at least on that entry, the two actors are IMDb linked. So you can click on the name and IMDb.
I'm taking lessons learned. I don't want to do the show guide talk too much, but I am taking lessons learned from the Hot D show guide. So every actor I do on the Rings of Power show guide is automatically IMDb-ing.
Nice.
So we're learning a lot of stuff. I also learned, this is my new superpower, I learned how to make the backgrounds of sigils transparent so that they look all pretty when they are logos.
Check you out. Nice.
I know. All right. Enough blathering about my show guides. We are going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll get into episode 6. We'll be right back with more House of the Dragon. And we're back with more House of the Dragon. Okay, so it's 10 years later. We've gone 10 years in the future, and we are on episode 6. An older Rhaenyra gives birth to her third son. The queen demands to see it, and Rhaenyra walks up the steps of the Red Keep while recovering from labor.
Discovering how hard it is to walk after labor.
Yeah. Viserys, of course, is in even worse shape.
This was Alicent. I was just flabbergasted by this. It's a great opener. It's just a perfect way to set the stage between these two characters. The enmity that is existing between them, the friction, the tension, and the fact that Rhaenyra is like, okay, I'll call your I want to see the kid, and I'll raise you. The fact that you're going to be, you know, everybody's going to see me dribbling blood through the halls and know the depths of your cruelty.
Yeah. And I think that when you look at these two people, you see two ideas, two competing visions of good. And one sees compliance with the rules as good. The other sees ends and means as good. Right. Mm. And so you have Rhaenyra saying like, okay, you know what? I produce children who can inherit the throne. And it's all good, guys. You know, they're good kids. They have Targaryen blood. They have dragons. We're all fine. And Alicent's like, that might be well and good, but it's a lie. And it's better to fight a war over a lie than it is to accept that lie.
Mm-hmm. Is this like the person who comes to a complete stop at an intersection at early in the morning where it's visible that there's nobody around and but yet you make the complete stop? Or is this versus the person who kind of rolls up, it looks clear, and just keeps rolling through, like the letter of the law?
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. Because you're one or the other, right?
Well, look, I actually do come to a full stop for those situations, because I think driving is something where you're just like, I'm scared of hitting somebody with my metal block. So anyway, but my point is, this is something where there's like real people at stake.
Right.
And real people are going to get hurt if you insist on this rigid compliance to the rules.
Agreed.
And to you know, your vision of the truth of just everyone needs to know everybody's business all the time.
Right. Right. And yeah, it's clear. It's a great setup to the fact that Laenor is not the sire of these of these children's. Because then you're like, oh, what is going on? Because we did jump the 10 years. And then, boom, right. We're just starting in media res, I guess, as the case may be, right? We're just in the action.
Right, which I think is cool. It's a really cool way to do it.
I think it's very cool.
And I want to point out, you know, you said, oh, well, she's dripping blood through this whole place. She's looking really bad and making everyone feel bad for her. Lord Caswell is the one who says, hey, if there's anything I can do, please let me know. There may come a time, Lord Caswell. Lord Caswell later is the one who doesn't bow right away for Aegon when they make the Lord's Re swear their oaths and then eventually gets hanged for his loyalty to Rhaenyra.
Oh, nice.
So this moment worked on him, and we have consequences later.
Right. That's cool. Again, really good job with the plotting, you know, breaking the story down and getting the big board with the red string, you know, all the plots.
Yep. So yeah, it's really cool to rewatch this because you see them sort of putting these little things in it.
Right.
We, of course, see Rhaenyra's family with her two older sons that look a lot like the omnipresent Harwin Strong. Jace and Luke Valerian go to play with their uncles Aegon and Aemond. Aemond is taunted about not having a dragon. Helaena Targaryen, the youngest of Alicent and Viserys, actually, she's not the youngest. I said that wrong. Helaena Valerian, the daughter of Alicent and Viserys, prophecies about Aemond giving an eye for a dragon. He'll have to give an eye.
Right. Yeah. And she's got a touch of the green sight, right? Playing with the bugs and insects.
Now. It's not the green sight in the Targaryens. They have their own little prophecies thing with the Valyrian blood and whatnot.
Right. And she's going to be an interesting character, I think, coming up. I hope we see her a little bit more in this season. Because she's got just a cool, creepy vibe.
I know some spoilers about her from reading online. And, you know, I sacrificed myself for the show guide because there were some times where some spoilers arose. But now you guys can read the show guide without spoilers because I removed them before I posted it.
Huzzah. We haven't talked much about the dragon CGI in the last couple of episodes, and I have to say they're pretty on their game until
what I'm going to say later is that, boy, that CGI for Damon and Lena was horrendous.
Which part?
Where Damon and Lena are riding dragons together above Pentos.
Oh, right. Oh, was
I
it
thought
horrendous?
That looked horrible.
Okay. Huh. It didn't catch me.
Maybe and I'm was... not usually the guy to complain no, about it. That's not usually you.
Yes, exactly.
I'm usually pretty forgiving. And I was watching this and I was like, this look is horrible.
I'm trying to think. Maybe I was, where was I? Was I watching it on my laptop? That's interesting that I didn't pick up on it. So, okay. Well, so far, I mean, this stuff in the, what do you call the big dragon pit? The dragon pit.
Yeah.
seemed pretty cool to me. I was pretty happy with
that. Yeah, that was cool. That was cool. And I did like the pig dragon. That was funny. We got you a dragon.
kids are going to do, right? Yeah, they're just, there's no trauma like sibling trauma, right? Mm-hmm. Like familial trauma. They are pretty harsh on each other, you know, going forward in mm-hmm. all of these little situations.
And do you know Tween Aegon is played by Ty Tennant, David Tennant's son?
Oh, no. I did not know that.
And he looks pretty much like him. He's his adopted son.
Oh, wild.
It was a child of his wife's first, I don't think it was a marriage. It was just a child from his wife.
Okay.
And he had adopted Ty. And if you look up, you can see David Tennant holding a piece of paper behind Ty at a convention where he's signing for House of the Dragon that says he's not that special. But the funniest part about this is that David Tennant's father-in-law played the doctor in like a non-canon spinoff. And when David Tennant was signing autographs as the doctor, his father-in-law did the same thing to him.
Okay.
And said he's not that special. So this is now a family tradition.
Got it. Okay.
That you have to say he's not that special when somebody new in the family gets famous.
Funny.
Yep. Daemon and his... Oh, no, I skipped it. Alicent implies Rhaenyra's children are bastards with Viserys, who tells her to never speak of it again because of the consequences. Alicent then vents to Kristen Cole. She tells Aegon that one day he will be king.
This is where we get this intensity from Alicent as well, where she grabs him and is like, you know, like she's... Yeah, there's a fire in her. There's a steel in her. Mm-hmm. And it's ugly. It's kind of ugly in a way.
Yep. Yeah, and I do think that her childhood shaped her. She might not have become this hall monitor, but because of the deception. I think here's the thing. She had no compassion to hold on to. Every relationship she had was political and fabricated. Between her
manipulated
marriage.
And gaslit and yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you do when you don't have relationship? You find something to believe in. And that for her was the rules.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Was the employee handbook.
Right.
We've all had that coworker who's like, you know, on page 62 of the employee handbook.
That's right.
All right. And this whole Viserys with consequences thing. He's like, there will be consequences, but that's going to be after I'm dead. So it's fine. So just keep it to yourselves. You can handle that later.
And this toxicity with Kristen Cole, this, mm-hmm. you know, this brewing tea between.
Oh, they're mean girls.
Oh man. It's ugly and it's gross. And
Kristen Cole definitely has a burn book.
I I love the fact the way that we get introduced to the fact that he's now her protector by when they show up at the door with the baby. And it's like, oh, wait, Kristen Cole's here. Wait, oh. Like, it's also
why is he alive?
Right.
Well, got a lot too. Of questions here. Why is Kristen Cole alive or not at the wall?
Yeah, because Alicent said, great, I can use it. So she's learning the game of manipulation and deception.
Mm-hmm. So back to my bad CGI. Daemon and Lena ride dragons together in Pentos. Reggio, the prince of Pentos, offers them a permanent residence in exchange for defending Pentos with dragons. Lena is not happy about it.
We never really talked about Daemon and Lena's courtship during the big ball scene.
It was like a one-line flirt.
But it was effective. And so and it was... Oftentimes we complain in other shows about, oh, this plot point or why I don't, you know, this character or whatever, because they didn't give us that one line or that one scene. And so they set this relationship up perfectly. I think it's a couple of scenes. There's a couple of looks and then there's an interaction and it's just enough so that it signals us this is going to happen. And so when it does happen, it's clear and it makes sense. And it's like, oh, okay, this is all good.
Yeah, and you're almost as pretty as your brother is a hilarious pickup line.
It is.
It's hilarious.
It's very good. And Lena, she would have been an awesome queen. I think she would have rocked it.
Yeah, I mean, as much as you can when you're married to Viserys, the rotting king.
But yeah, she just has a poise and a... I don't know. Yeah, I think she would have made a good queen.
She's a good mother. You know, she's given a pep talk to her daughter later. She's we'll talk about that in a second.
And what is it? Nana Blondell is the actor. She's anyway. Sorry,
you
that
can
she's
check
not.
The deceased section.
Yes,
of our
I know.
Show
that's
guide.
Why I'm looking, and I'm
yeah, I know because you have a lot of people who have very similar names: Lena, Bela. Yeah. Raina, Lenore.
Yeah, and she goes out. And again, it's this theme of childbirth is not an easy thing in these days.
No. But, well, let's get to that in a minute. Yeah, I don't want to talk about childbirth yet.
Yeah.
Harwin Strong and Kristen Cole have a proxy fight about the Targaryen and Valyrian kids' training. Kristen goads Harwin into attacking him. Lionel scolds his son for giving truth to rumors. Rhaenyra stops Lenor from going off to war when he has a newborn.
Yes. Again, more... This is less stupid people doing stupid stuff. I actually really... They made Harwin Strong very likable. Like, I like his character, and he seems like he's a good dad, and he gives a shit, and he's there, unlike Lenore, who's just getting drunk with his buddies, his buddy. Mm-hmm. It really paints a stark picture between the two, and yeah, I don't know. I kind of dig Harwin, and I'm sad to to lose him.
Yeah, I mean, Kristen Cole is such a mean girl. He's so petty. Yes,
God.
And you just love to hate him, which is amazing because, you know, this show does a great job of making you love yes. people you used to hate.
Yep.
This is one of the first instances where I hate someone I used to love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he was kind of cool when she plucked him out of sort of obscurity. And mm-hmm. yeah, he seemed like he was all right.
It's like, and cool, then, you know, you gave me a whole place in the royal household. And yeah, that's over.
Yeah.
That's over. And the proxy fight was just sad, right? Like, oh, beat him up, beat him up. It's like, stop using the children
mm-hmm.
to get back at your ex.
And meanwhile, Lionel Strong and Viserys are watching from the balcony. And I think Lionel Strong, I don't know. I don't know what he was thinking about the kids. He's certainly horrified by his son's actions. And his grandsons by, you know, his blood grandsons. But Viserys is like, oh, boys will be boys. You know, isn't mm-hmm. this sweet? This is how you make memories and all
right,
that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it's like, no, they're actually inflicting very deep trauma on each other that is yep. never going to go away.
Yeah, they're doing lifelong grudge kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then we have Rhaenyra, of course, putting her foot down with Laenor. Like, no, you know what?
Yeah.
I've let you drink and bang whoever you want. You are staying here while you have a newborn, or we are going to have problems with image here.
Yeah.
It's a PR game, Laenor.
And he's a dandy, right? He just wants to have fun. He doesn't have, he's not yoked with any responsibility. And he has these memories of war and high adventure. And yeah, it's just, being a consort to the princess is just boring for him. Makes me think, did you ever watch The Crown?
I did not. Okay. I think I watched like the first couple episodes of it, and then I was like, I'm bored.
Oh, okay.
I'm really not that into the royal stuff. I think
sure.
that they are just kind of obsolete.
Well, if you separating it from the documentary, you know, mm-hmm. aspect of it, but if then you look at this relationship that's under these series of relationships that are under this pressure of being royals and all of what that means, there's some great stuff where they have to deal with these same questions where the woman, you know, that you have the one person who is the ruler and then the one person who's the consort. And the consort has a lot of power and a lot mm-hmm. of resource, but a lot of time to get up to no good. And
right.
It's a very similar situation. You can see this very much in real life. So the whole thing plays true, right? It rings true. Lenore's sort of playboy ways that it just, oh yeah, you could totally see that.
Right. Yeah. I like the whole characterization. Although they kind of painted Lenore in a mixed light here. Like he seems like a really good husband at first, at least in a friendly way, right? Like they're best friends.
Mm-hmm.
I think mm-hmm. that's sort of the relationship that Rhaenyra has formed with Lenore. They're like besties.
Right.
And you know, I at first he's like walking up the stairs, please just hold on to me at least.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then you have this weird thing. So I think they have a mixed bag this one. I think over the next few episodes, we're going to get to like Lenore more. I remember liking him more by the end of his run.
Okay.
So Rhaena tries to hatch a dragon egg and gets a pep talk from her mom, Lena, about not having a dragon until she was 15. We know she got Vhagar. Lena then gives a pep talk to Daemon, noting his secret desire for the Targaryen legacy.
See, Lena's just good. She's just a good person. She's
very thinking perceptive.
Perceptive, thinking of the best for her people, trying to, you know, buoy them in their, you know, in their blue states. Yeah, it's just such a shame. We're stuck with all the rotten, mean, nasty people, and all the good people end up getting burned.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, there's this whole thing of like, how are dragon eggs hatched?
Mm-hmm.
Fire and blood seems to be the formula.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't recall if this happened here, but shouldn't Lena's death have something to do with the dragon egg hatching? Maybe, okay. Maybe they have to be the same flame. I don't know. I don't know the rules of these magic eggs, but it seems like
I definitely a life ending. Rules. Yeah.
A life ending plus fire on the egg
mm-hmm.
makes dragon.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't right I'm not in. Enough in the world to know the mechanics right in. Of this.
Maybe we could ask Mr. Anthony when he comes on.
That'd be a good question. Yeah, for when yeah. we talk to him. Because yeah. I think we're planning to talk to him. Something we didn't talk about, or just really quickly, it's not that we didn't talk about it, but it was something I wanted to mention. I remember in Game of Thrones when, you know, they went over to the other continent and all the other stuff over there. And it felt very like remote and discovered and history's lost, but yet there's still mm-hmm. plenty of things going on. And here it's like, oh no, we're just, you know, stuff. There's trade, there's political infighting, there's people coming and going. It's a very active place. Yet when we come out of Game of Thrones, it's like, oh, this exotic East and, you know, all these forgotten things. This time period, it just seems like a regularity that we're doing all this trade and commerce and people are coming and going.
Well, I think that's actually a geography issue because this is Pentos, which is still built up in the Game of Thrones era. You'll recall in the beginning of Game of Thrones, Daenerys and Viserys, the other Viserys, right?
Right.
With a different kind of gold crown. But they are staying with Illyrio Mopatis.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Yep. In this like mansion, basically.
Right.
And that's Pentos.
Right.
So Pentos is pretty built up and modern and whatnot. It's just that near the doomed Valyria, there was a lot of collapse of society. So those are where it's a little bit more iffy.
Right, right.
So, and it's the same thing as everywhere, right? Like some places are better to live on each continent than others.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't want to live with the wildlings in Game of Thrones, right? In Westeros.
It just feels more lived in. The world seems more connected.
Yeah. So. And there's still the same political structure too in Game of Thrones. The prince is the leader of the city and whatnot. So yeah. Yep. War has broken out in the Stepstones again, and the Triarchy has allied with Dorne. An interesting detail. Alicent and Rhaenyra argue about the course of action. Rhaenyra tries to make peace with Alicent by offering a marriage between Jace and Helena and a dragon egg for Aemond. Viserys is into it, but Alicent is not. Viserys is like, great idea! This is the best thing I've ever heard! Oh, so happy day! My perfect. Family is together!
Exactly. It's exactly what he would want it. And it's a great decision by Rhaenyra, right? Mm-hmm. And he would be very proud of her. I think it's a smart play.
Oh, splendid day.
it really is in so many ways the answer to the conundrum of when Rhaenyra takes the throne, what happens to Alicent? And it completely solves the question.
Mm-hmm.
And Alicent is just so indignant and what's the word? There's a word I was thinking of for her the other day and I forget what it is. Just
narc.
this kind of arrogance and she just can't abide.
She's snooty.
Yeah.
She's snooty. She's like, I'm above your bastards.
Mm-hmm. So is this the Stepstones with the Dorne and the Triarchy? That's going to be a bit of a thorn in everybody's sides coming in the next season, you think?
No, I think that's pretty much resolved. That resolves later this season.
Does it? Okay. Well, mm-hmm. There you go. I don't remember the season all that well. So
there's a whole plot line with Corlys. You can check if you want to read ahead. You can check our show guide. This is my last pitch for the show, I promise. You can check our show guide for a season one summary where you'll see how that plot line resolved.
That's right.
Lionel resigns as Hand of the King due to Harwin's actions and shadow over his house. Viserys declines to accept the resignation. Lionel gets leave to set up Harwin at Harrenhal.
This is really sad because it seemed like Lionel Strong was a really good hand. You know, he's got some values. He's got some sense of morality. You know, he can play dirty, but for the right reasons. And yeah, he just seemed like a really good guy.
Mm-hmm.
We lose a lot of people.
When does he play dirty?
Well, you have to play dirty if you're the hand. It's implied. I guess. Like the hand has to do a lot of dirty work.
Not if you're Ned Stark.
No, but then you lose your head.
Right, right, right.
So we see how that works out.
Well, I think what's really sad about it is you look at the difference between him and Otto. Otto has to be told you're compromised and you can't be the hand anymore.
Right.
Lionel, and he's resisting that. Lionel says, I'm compromised. I can't be the hand anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, too bad.
Yeah.
Too bad.
It's a very, you know, to comp back to Shogun, it's a, you know, it's an honorable thing. He's thinking of the honor of his lord and thinking of the bigger picture and not just of himself, which is what his son doesn't understand. But then we get his son's motivations, even though he's, you know, siring a bunch of bastard children. He's there for them. You know, he cares. And he's trying to, you know, stand up for him. So, like, I get the motivation of this, you know, manly man father figure, you know, with Harwin. But Lionel's sense of duty and honor and the perceptions of power is so spot on. And mm-hmm. yet he can't see the danger that is, you know, in his own house with his own family.
Yep. Yeah. Well, he does see the danger, right? Like, that's why he tries to resign.
No, oh, I see.
Oh, with Laris. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, and so Lionel is just, he's so unaware of the danger of Laris in his own, you know, the danger that's in his own house. You know, and you know, partly Laris is able to disguise that, but at the same time, you're the hand, man. If you're not keeping an eye on everybody, You're falling down on the job mm-hmm. a little bit. So yeah, he's just ignorant to his whole creepy son doing creepy stuff, which ends his life.
Yeah, I mean, Laris puts on a good show. That's what I'll say. He puts on a good show.
Very, very good show.
He's just a very harmless second son with a cane who just stumbles in and out, makes some comments about Hightower Green, and then walks away.
Hmm.
Hmm. Allison has dinner with Laris, speaking of. She laments the absence of her father. Laris then removes the tongues of prisoners awaiting execution and offers them pardons in exchange for a price.
Really, I liked the acceleration that we go from Laris is like, oh, okay, you know, he's got the ear of the queen and he's playing some power plays. And then boom, evil guy, right?
Yeah.
Twirling his mustachio and doing dark deeds.
But that's also the genius of skipping 10 years, which is we get the seeds of it before the time skip. And then after the time skip, we can just comfortably say, okay, some events happened that time that made it so that they regularly have dinner together.
Right.
And she confides in him.
And then he's got access to the jails and is able to, you know, round up some unsavory characters.
Yeah. So I want to point out kind of an out of character statement for Allison, but is I think it's kind of in character too. So against the whole like rule follower thing is this statement where Laris says, your father could hardly be impartial either. And she said, he would be partial to me.
Okay.
Because she's like, well, then he would be on my side, even if he couldn't be impartial. And that's not really a rule following thing, right? That's saying I want favorable treatment.
Mm-hmm.
But it is in line with the abandonment she felt as a child. Her mother dies. Her father is banished after a time and her father is manipulating her. Her best friend betrays her. Her husband is dying constantly and she just has nobody, and so I think she had her father by default and she wants somebody back,
and he was a bit of a cold man with his affections, and he was always on the job, right?
There which was is never weird time for someone with such a thick and ungroomed beard. You would think he'd be warmer.
Sadly, no. It's all an illusion.
Even by friction. I mean, come on.
And so Laris is in a perfect position to capitalize on her needing an ally. And so she starts to pull allies to her, Kristen Cole, Laris, and yet they're the worst of the worst in their own ways.
Yep. Yep. Anyone on Allison's side, she desperately clings to. And she presents them with her treasures, which are her stompers. All right.
Moving
All
on. Right.
Lena is having a bad childbirth, and the attending offers Daemon a C-section, just like Viserys. Instead, Lena begs her dragon Vhagar to burn her, which Vhagar reluctantly does.
So another tough childbirth situation. And then we started this episode with Rhaenyra, right? Mm-hmm. With her close up of her face.
Right. And we start the season with Aemma saying, this is our battlefield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're constantly working this theme, and she, at least Lena in this moment, has agency. It's a terrible it's tragic, right? It's what it is. It's tragic, but at least she had agency to make her own choices as opposed to, let me use the show guide and find, where's the deceased column? Viserys's first wife.
Oh, Aemma, yeah.
Sorry?
Aemma,
okay.
Aemma Arryn, although, you know, nay Arryn, but it's Targaryen.
Right. We need a deceased view.
A deceased view. Yeah, I know. The list keeps getting longer, and it's only going to keep growing.
View name, deceased. Okay.
Okay, so very sad. Vhagar... such a cool dragon. And I love that they show this, you know, that she needs to plead for Vhagar.
Right.
To do it. And the whole thing is just so interesting with agency, right? She's like, if I'm going to die, because she says earlier in the episode, I want to die a dragon rider's death. I don't want to die, you know, fat and plump. And she does. She dies a dragon rider's death.
And it's, God, that dragon is huge. It's just so massive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just tragic. I don't know. That's the only thing I'm left with it is just the tragedy of it.
Yeah.
And that what does Daemon take away from it? You know,
would Daemon have authorized a C-section? Cause he didn't get a chance to answer.
He didn't. Okay.
No, Lena runs away before he even really gets a chance to answer.
I suppose that's true. Yeah. I suppose that's true.
Well, that's the end of Lena's story, unfortunately. But not the end of Vhagar's. We'll see. Harwin says goodbye to his secret family and returns to Harrenhal with his father, where they are burned to death by Laris's henchmen. Rhaenyra and Laenor flee to Dragonstone, but she allows him to bring his lover, Carl Corey. Alicent learns what Laris did and is horrified.
Yeah. I love the whole thing with Laris. Like, well, you know, you said you had a little problem, so I dealt with it, which, you know, goes back to the will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest?
Well, that and it incriminates her, right? Like, she's right. Like, even though it's not her fault, he's making her feel like it's her fault. And so now he has her. No matter what he does, he has her.
It's a very good point. Yeah, he's locked her in. He's boxed her in, and she's she's now tainted.
He wanted her to have the blood on her hands. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah, he had to implicate her so that she's locked in. It's will no one rid me of this turbulent priest, I believe is the correct one. So, not meddlesome.
Yep.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. The fact that she's compromised, and she goes with it, right? She doesn't you know, she starts to use these tools that she has at her disposal,
right?
And you know, between Otto and Laris and Kristen Cole, that's a pretty murder, that's a ugly murderer's row right there.
That's another triarchy for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, this has been a lovely two traumatic episodes, David. The season's getting darker by the minute, and next episode will be the darkest episode yet because for some reason they forgot to turn on the lights on set that day.
Oh, is this one of the dark episodes?
It's Driftmark. Next okay. episode is Driftmark, where we're going to have the funeral of Lena.
Right.
And it's going to be extremely dark the whole time. I remember okay. watching it the first time and being like, is the brightness off on my TV? Like, what is wrong here?
I wonder if they fixed it in the episode. Have you already watched ahead?
I have not watched ahead.
Okay.
But I doubt it. I'm just going to say, I think HBO just loves their dark Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
All right. Shall we move to listener feedback?
Let's do it.
So if you want to send listener feedback, you can send it to hotd@thelorehounds.com. That's hotd@thelorehounds.com. You can go to the contact page on our website, thelorehounds.com. You can also send us a voicemail there. You could also just tag us on Discord and say, hey, David, John, we really want to chat with you about Hot D. Marilyn Arpaquila, again, not watching the show, has continued to write in, and I love it. I love getting this like we're completely out of context Marilyn feedback. Marilyn says, hey, Lorehounds, here's a few bits and pieces I thought of during the second episode. Our second episode, so episodes 3 and 4 we covered. The White Hart has long been a symbol of British royalty going back to Richard II in the 1300s. Also, in Celtic tradition, to encounter a White Hart in a forest means a message of some kind. The meeting also delineates the boundary between the everyday world and the fey world. It is usually pretty evocative for any viewers/readers. And the boar was a personal symbol of Richard, Duke of... Oh, man. Can you say it?
I don't have it open.
Gloucester? So it's like Gloucester, right?
Oh, Gloucester. Yeah, yeah, Gloucester.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Who became Richard III? So if you have... Also, Brits, fix your cities. They're spelled stupidly. So if you have a character associated with the boar, you might think of him as a fierce warrior, and yet a conniving and untrustworthy person. If you go by the more historical and nuanced version... The boar may symbolize someone who is incredibly loyal, skillful, and just. You pay your money and you take, you pays your money and you takes your choice. I think this is a stylized thing for Marilyn. I heard you repeat some character's line, I only ever live to serve you. And suddenly I was hearing echoes of Grima Wormtongue speaking to Theoden. Tolkien influence much? Yeah, George is ripping from Tolkien all over the place.
Sure, but it's hard not to, right? When it's so definitive in the genre.
And then I'm going to skim over Marilyn's compliments to my song. Thank you, Marilyn. I don't want to say that many nice things about myself in a row. I like this background on the White Hart. I didn't know this was a real world thing.
That's very cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this connection to the Fey world and to, you know, to powers, greater powers that we can perceive that, you know, me... Danes or sort of indicate the way that the universe would like things to go or signs and portents kind of stuff. So yeah, it's a very cool insight.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Marilyn, again. Very cool stuff. I hope you'll keep writing in, even if you're not going to watch the show. Always happy to have you. And if you want to hear more from Marilyn, check out our Rings of Power teaser breakdown. It was a lot of fun
with that.
Yep. We have also got a voicemail from Abby, who is not going to tell us about our Shogun poor pronunciation this time, but instead going to talk about High Valyrian. Here we go.
Hello, friends. Ritsas Rakirosa. My name is Abby, Nyuhabrozi, Abby Issa. You know me as the one with the bee in her bonnet about the Japanese name pronunciations during Shogun showtimes. I am back for House of the Dragon, Zaldrizo Lentor. With less bees in my bonnet and another nerdy language input. I have less complaints about the way names are said differently, even if you heard them on screen, because it's a made-up language and a lot of people's first encounter with it was by reading it. So you make up your own mind how something might be pronounced when you read it, and it is hard to unlearn later, but not impossible, if you have curiosity. I went into studying High Valyrian, Valirijo Loran. I am studying Valyrian. because I wanted to know how some stuff is supposed to sound, and seemed like a fun, nerdy thing to do, a mental massage of sorts. Also, some people's derision of the accent of a certain actress in the first season of Hot D didn't sit well with me. And, you know, the foreigner had an accent when talking the common tongue. Shocker, right? And thank you for getting her name right, Miss Aria. The very people who made fun of her were pronouncing her name as Miseria. My God. Okay. As for my own accent, yeah, you know, another foreigner using the common tongue. Yet again, ui usoven. I am sorry. Okay, what I found out that Valyrian is very different from English and has some kind of Latin flavors to it. Also, that the family relations, as expected, and the words related to them are a big old mess. It took me quite a while and a chart to get past that unit. But I digress. Let me dive in on the most confusing debate of all, the Valyrian Velaryon one. So the country, the place is Valyria. The house is Velaryon. Okay. Another one I heard pronounced in different ways is Rhaenyra's dragon. They say a lot of people, they say, call her Cyrex, like T-Rex, and it's actually Syrax. Fun tidbit about Rhaenyra and Rhaenys also. Their names may be derived, or I don't know, reverse engineered from the word Rhaenagon, which means finding. Rhaenys' dragon, and that one is called Melis, or the red one, it can be translated as Mele, it means red. Anyway, if anyone has some questions about fun words and expressions, at me on the Discord, and I will try to find them. It's not that I have a dictionary, just some notes, and I still haven't finished the course, so, well, that's it. Anyway, I want to add that Nikela Avipasan, I believe in you, and Aohiboti Rakan, I appreciate your work. Thank you, Kirinbose, for listening.
Wow. Do we have is she a philologist?
It could be a philologist.
It's our very own language expert. I think it's great that we have a Valyrian language expert in our midst, mm-hmm. as well as, I mean, Abby was instrumental during our Shogun coverage. Shogun. And just so appreciative of our listeners. It's a really fun group to have. And so I'll be looking forward to hearing some more interesting. I love this, you know, this idea of these words, breaking them down and sort of mm-hmm. the hidden meanings and some of the names and the allusions that they might have to, you know, other, you know, forces or themes. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that is very cool. And I like that you say Valyrian has parallels to Latin, because that seems to be what George did in sort of the breakdown of Essos too, because the mm-hmm. different cities in Essos have their own dialects of Valyrian, but they, rather than, you know, Latin breaking down into Spanish and Italian, blah, 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 now they have, you know, Miranese Valyrian and this and that, you know, mm-hmm. they just call it variations of Valyrian. And that's why you get that cool scene with Daenerys in the in Game of Thrones, where she's like, I know how to speak High Valyrian. It's my mother tongue, and I'm going to burn you up. Remember that whole thing? Anyway, that's a cool thing. I really appreciate you writing in with that, Abby, and I appreciate your belief in us.
I studied Latin for 1 year, my freshman year of high school. It was a foolish decision. We had in Portland, we had a magnet high school program where you could go here for mm-hmm. theater, and you could go there for shop, and you could go here for language, and there's all these different sort of options. And a bunch of my friends were going to this one high school, and I thought, oh, well, you know, I'll just sort of go with the crowd. It was across town, and I was like, I'm going to study Latin. Yeah, what the hell? It was the biggest mistake, man. It's just a waste of my time, because I was just in no way had the brain space at that age of my life. I was interested in a lot of other things, not learning, you know, conjugating verbs. Oh man. So I regret my attempting to learn Latin. I appreciate the fact that I have an appreciation of it, but that's all I really got out of it. And it made the Monty Python Life of Brian scene where the Romans make Brian conjugate the verbs on the wall very funny.
That was pretty funny too.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again, Abby. I hope you'll keep calling in, writing in, whatever you want to do. Always happy to hear your voice.
Yes.
Let's do an outro, David.
Let's wrap it up for today. I think we've talked enough about the Patreon and Supercast.
Yeah,
and
we've been plugging that the whole time.
Yeah.
Sign up if you want it.
The Discord, we've got a whole group of channels set up for all the different projects that we've got going on. And we'll have a whole setup for season 2 of House of the Dragon, and all of the different episode discussion areas will be siloed, so you won't get spoilers if you don't want to be in there. We've got a great moderator team. Thank you to all of them. We just did a big server reorganization to try to make it a little bit more cohesive. It was just sort of growing. We kind of threw it together at the beginning, and we ended up having to need a mod team, and we have a great group of volunteers who help us with that. And thank you to all of them for the hard work that they did and thinking through and then implementing the new server scheme. So hopefully everybody is very happy with that. And join us there. It's a good place to nerd out with all of your fellow nerds. We're not nerds. I don't know. Are we nerds? I don't know. We're fans.
Sure we are.
Sure.
Wear it as a badge of honor. Yeah. David, I'm going to limit us to programming notes about the coming week because we have so much coming.
Good
that
idea.
I'm not going to start listing our random projects.
No, because like we're going to be here for another 20 minutes and we both want to get home.
Exactly. You're already here for House of the Dragon, but there is plenty more on the feed. We've got Doctor Who Season 1, Episode 1 through 3. That's the soft reboot on Disney Plus. Alicia and I already talked about that. That's up on the feed. So is the Rings of Power Season 2 teaser reaction. We broke it down with Marilyn Arbukila, our favorite Tolkien scholar. And there's even a visual guide. So check out the show notes of that so that you get the visual breakdown too. X-Men 97, I'm going to be talking about with Alicia. It might get pushed to next week because my kids are sick and I might get sick.
Okay.
But we'll see how I feel tomorrow. I think I'm going to be okay, but you never know. But I loved it. I couldn't believe how good it was.
Amazing.
Yeah. Star Wars, we're coming back again. Very low chance, but it might get pushed to next week, is Episode 4, A New Hope. Episode 4, A New Hope. I know we've been pushing this for like 2 months, but we're going to do it. I promise. We're going to get it out there before we get into Hot D territory, you know, season 2 territory. Rings and Rituals are one affiliate. I'm going down the affiliates now. Rings and Rituals just put out a new episode today, the day we're recording, on Episode 5, Partings from the Rings of Power Season 1. So you can stay on the T-Rop train, look at it through the lens of ritual with Dr. Sarah Brown and Librarian Emerita Marilyn Arbukila. The Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast is going strong. Alicia's already through the Dawn of the Jedi, the Old Republic, and the KOTOR games, the Knights of the Old Republic games. Next, she's going to be doing the High Republic, and that way you can catch that feed with the Acolyte once she gets there with me.
You know, I need some gardening or house projects, because that's the perfect kind of podcast that I just sort of, I got this, you know, task to do. So I've been saving up all those episodes because I've got a couple of things around the house this weekend. And I'm like, okay, that's going to be my listening.
You can binge them. This. Even though you have abandoned us on the Star Wars feed for the Acolyte.
I haven't abandoned you. I've made space.
I'm all alone.
There's
no one here beside
me. She is far more qualified to talk about it than I am.
All right. Radioactive Ramblings. You know, David, I finished Fallout. I finally did.
You did?
And
okay.
It was very, very good. So I've been listening back to the Radioactive Ramblings podcast, and I encourage everyone to do so because Aaron and Chase do a great job breaking it down, and they're going to continue doing a great job breaking it down for Invincible Season 2. They've got, I think it's live now, episodes 5 through 8 of Invincible Season 2. And they're staying in the Fallout universe by going through Fallout lore. Aaron's got a new co-host, and they are going to be going through the lore of the origins of the Brotherhood of Steel. That's already live on the feed. So subscribe to Radioactive Ramblings. You can find, of course, all our affiliates in the show notes in that link tree. A couple more affiliates, Properly Howard Movie Review. Anthony and Steve released a new Dune 2 review, which I learned was a new review
after it
came out. Mm-hmm. Not a re-release, unless I've been advertising on every podcast. So go check that out for their new thoughts on it. And then they'll be back with more felonies and fugazis. Will Shift Dust is still covering Beacon 23, three episodes at a time. This week, we're having an episode on episodes 4 through 6 of Beacon 23.
Alicia just posted in our chat that they had a monster record. Her and Luke had a monster recording session today. So that good tidings. I have not been catching up on Beacon 23. I am a little bit amiss on that. But
I've never watched an episode.
Okay.
And I'm going to be honest, I have too much on my plate to start it at this point. But I know a lot of people on the Discord are loving it. That channel is always popping off.
It is.
As the kids say.
We got you covered.
Skibbity. All right. That's all I got for show notes. We've just got to do our thank yous.
Yes. Let's move through them. Let's thank our Discord server boosters, Gnarls, Aaron K, Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, and Dew71. Thank you for boosting the server and making a more cooler place for us to all hang out. To our lore masters, our top tier subscribers, who without your all's support, we couldn't do all the different things that we're doing. So thank you, and here is your shout out: Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, David W, Brian P, Nick W, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Duve71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Eric F, Matthew M, Sarah M, DJ Miwa, Andra B, Kwong Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Aaron T, Sub-Zero, Aaron K, Dally V21, Mothership 61, Gnarls, and good things always come to those who are last, Adrian. Thank you all so very much. Thank you to everyone who is a subscriber. Remember, it's as little as $3 a month, and you get it all, and you get to support the community. If that's not your bag and you just want to hang on the public feeds, we're glad you're here. And we just thank everyone for all the continued support.
Thanks, everyone. We will see you next week for more House of the Dragon. The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.